Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010, as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and the world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 12 of the White Book Podcast.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to episode 485 of the White Book / Props and Slops. But
Roy, you have to stop typing.
Episode 485 of co-hosts type and do other things in the background.
It's so loud. It's like rolling thunder.
Like I've never done it before.
Hey. Let's take bets. Does Will get the last episode of 2021 up in 2021?
Oh, surely it'll be up in 2021. I mean, I admit episodes have been going up late, but it's just been more like going up on Monday instead of Friday.
Uh-huh. So, but by next Friday, the Monday after is 2022.
I mean, so I've got like a week and a half.
Yes.
I think I can do that.
This could definitely be up by Friday, Will. Like, usually the Props and Slops go up pretty quick.
Yeah, there's not as much editing done on them as shows were done in the olden days, so that helps.
Hey, apparently you're talking design with some design person about some dead game.
Yeah, last week. Well, I didn't talk design specifically all that much. But I chatted with Alex on the design committee for the global ops team.
Global ops?
Mm-hmm. Well, operations, but yeah.
Yes, I understand that. But Jesus.
It's very sinister sounding, isn't it?
It kind of is, but you know what? Dag nabbit, somebody just really wanted to spell shield. I mean, G-O-T, but whatever.
Egg his heart was in the right place when he came up with the name.
Yeah. Actually, I think that one was Sam Whitehead, if I remember right.
Oh, good on Sam.
Yeah. I wonder if Egg is Humpty Dumpty.
I don't know.
Sorry, it's a Storybook Brawl reference.
Well, for what it's worth, I'll just say we're running a membership drive through the end of the year, needing to get some new blood in and kind of round out some teams. So things can go full steam ahead in 2022. So go check out agot.cards and fill out the volunteer form.
No. Okay. Since I said no to that, hey, I had another question about that. Did we ever get confirmation on if we're being bribed to review the new cards?
You know, that's a good question. I did not get a final word on that, so I will follow up on that, and we'll see if, man, wouldn't that be a way to start 22 with a bang?
Like, this is the ideal time for Glazer to be recording long, endless episodes. He gets a week off next week.
Next week, I'm going to play with my child, play and screw around on Storybook Brawl like nothing else will be getting accomplished. So
that's why we used to do those Christmas holiday season episodes of The Second Sons, where we'd like review the whole year of cards.
Just had nothing better to do.
I also suffer from holiday depression disorder, so I dislike this time of year greatly. So,
well, in that case, time spent BSing with friends, I imagine, is somewhat therapeutic.
It is, although I have been getting along with my parents better. So,
well, good.
Yes.
Yeah, they believe in vaccines and think the world is round, so that's better.
Considering how much my friend's parents have shown their ass in the COVID era and the Trump era, I'm you know, we're in a better place.
New appreciation for
all it took was my father and I almost murdering each other on the 4th of July. So
I mean, that was 5 months ago.
No, this was 3 years ago.
That was 3 years and 5 months ago.
2 years ago. It was right after Al and I got married.
Okay. Stop making me say random different times.
235. 627.
All right. So the movie that I desperately wanted to see yesterday, but decided that going to movie theaters is a really stupid thing to do while Omicron is going on. What is Spider-Man? How is it?
So
I'm fully spoiled.
Before we get too far into that, let me preface this for listeners who think we are doing one thing on the show and we're about to start something different, because we've been telling everybody this is the year, like, recap props and slop show. But we're going to start first with standard props and slops because so much content has been coming out this late in the year. So this is current props and slops. Year end is about to come.
Yes.
In this episode.
It will. 100%.
I mean, so Spider-Man might be the best Marvel movie. Full stop.
Full stop. I've been hearing that from a lot of people, and I'd put it in like top five, but I personally don't feel it was better than Endgame.
Do you think they land? Okay, hold on. Wait.
You don't think it was better than what?
Endgame.
So
maybe
I think
Endgame, because it was really.
So sure, if you're combining, no, it was not. If you're combining both, Infinity War has its own full plot. If you're combining both, they're better. I like Infinity War significantly more than Endgame, although they're both in my top tier. I think as a standalone, No Way Home is better than either individually.
It's sort of standalone, No Way Home, that is.
100%.
But it, I mean, also not, right? Sort of requires five other films before.
Okay,
it.
So it's every bit as standalone as Infinity War.
Sure, okay, sure. I mean, none of these Marvel movies.
What are you comparing it to?
But, built. It's not just built as a standalone. It's built as a like fan service tearjerker. Like that's what it's going for hard. And I feel the Endgame does that a little better. That's all.
I mean, it depends on how much you're invested in the other. Oh, okay, just be clear here. This is going to be full spoilers because I'm going to just jump the spoil. I haven't seen the movie, but I'm fully spoiled. But I just want to be clear to people because people get kitschy about this stuff. All right, I think it really depends on which is more meaningful to you, the Spider-Men's or like the Tony
Spider's
like
man.
Cap, like Avengers, like goodbye stuff. Like I was practically crying at the end of Endgame because like that stuff means way more to me than the Spider-Men's do. Like I'm excited to see them.
I don't give a shit about Spider-Man. Spider-Man is one of my least favorite Marvel heroes. I don't care about Spider-Man. I thought the movie blew it away even despite that. Despite my, like, I think it was better executed than Endgame.
That's fair.
I don't think it was better executed than Infinity War, but I thought it was more cohesive than Infinity War.
Yeah, I mean, Infinity War had to pay off,
like a million
different 10 years of Marvel movies, right? But I think it's the greatest superhero crossover of all time.
Oh, like, without any question.
Like, it just does everything a crossover is supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Which Endgame, like, is more fan service-y. Like, I love Endgame. Like, I watch it, like, once every 4 or 5 months. Like, when I'm super at my lowest point, I watch Endgame. It always makes me feel good.
I still haven't had the heart to rewatch Endgame.
Oh, it's just,
it so affected me so strongly.
Service. There's so much beautiful fan service, though. Do you know what I mean?
I have rewatched Endgame. I don't usually rewatch Marvel movies either. Like, I don't chew my re-chewed gum. I feel like that's generally not, like, they're bubble gum, and you don't usually go back to bubble gum. But I'll go back to, like, the very best. Like, I've seen Black Panther twice. I've seen Endgame 2 or 3 times. I've seen Infinity War 2 or 3 times. I will be rewatching Spider-Man. I will rewatch Shang-Chi at some point. Like,
it's worth it.
I rewatched Guardians, like, I rewatched Ragnarok to confirm much.
Thor Ragnarok, that's, weirdly enough, that's probably the Marvel film I've rewatched the most somehow.
It's definitely the most rewatchable.
So I like it, but it's not, I don't love it the way everyone else seems to, largely. And we've been over this. Excuse me.
That's fair.
We've been over this, that that's not the tone I want from my, like, Ragnarok Thor. Like, I love Walt Simonson, and I feel like the tone was too far off for me personally. I recognize why everyone loved it so much. Either way, No Way Home is a tier one Marvel movie. Like, it's in the category with those. And,
yeah,
like,
I can see that.
I think the thematic cohesiveness and gut punches of it were fantastic. The only thing I wanted more of, and I understand why it wasn't there, the fucking movie was 2.5 hours, was like, he's arrested, he's in trouble, and then like two scenes later, I'm like, yeah, Daredevil says it's gonna be okay, so it's okay.
Yeah, that felt very rushed, and this is partly why we're, you know, spoilerful, Daredevil's there. And I mean, as awesome as that was, even though I had spoiled myself previously by following certain Reddit forums, and it still felt good, but it just felt so disconnected from the rest of the movie. It's just like, hey, oh no, everything's terrible. Oh, hey, here's a scene, you know, that didn't segue at all, where somebody who's not even really introduced says, oh no, everything's fine. And then different unconnected scene and away we go. That was not as strong as it could have been.
I mean, I think the specific transition from Far From Home to No Way Home shows one of the cracks in the Marvel formula, which is that they frequently set things up, and then it can even be the same creative team. In the case of the Spider-Man movie, it is. It's the same director, same writers, same producers. They go, you know what? We're not actually going to, like, really, like, lean into this thing that we set up in the previous movie. You know, Thor Ragnarok's a great example of this. Thor 2 sets up a whole bunch of stuff for Thor that Thor Ragnarok deals with in, what, 15 minutes? If that, mm-hmm. like, and then literally blows up the entire franchise. Like, you know, and the Ant-Man movies do that. Iron Man did, like, you know, movies did that. Like, you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier into Civil War. Like, would you have thought that Civil War would have been the next Captain America movie after you finished watching Winter Soldier?
Sounds like, a lot like this is a, like, third film issue in their
yeah, little arcs. Like, they probably had a version of this story that if they couldn't get Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield to agree to do this, that they would have done something else, right? But they got them. Plus Willem Dafoe, which was Willem Dafoe as amazing as he was in the original Spider-Man movie.
Oh my goodness.
Where he's the best part of the original Spider-Man movie.
He was the best of these villains by a pretty healthy margin, though Alfred Molina is still amazing. He was even
the janitor.
Better. Like, he had a darker edge, I felt. Felt a little more unhinged as the Goblin.
Well, they just died, so.
Yeah, or seconds before he died or whatever, they pulled him out. But, like, and his Goblin laugh, I think, is easily as iconic as Hamill's Joker laugh at this point.
It's great. Like, he's just so good at being unhinged.
Yes.
So there's minor things, I think, that could have been changed. But the movie's a home run.
And did they really fix Electro?
Yeah,
I heard they fixed
him. Like, they gave him a body again. I think he and Lizard are the weakest of the villains that appear as far as having any, like, motivation, even, like, let alone any growth. They're just kind of like, we're here and we like being villains.
I kind of liked Electro. That's kind of his deal, right? Like,
Electro's just a dick in the comics. Like, that's
well, his... no, but not in the comics. So, like, in the movie, he has, like, the movie sucks, right? Like, it's not a good movie. Although I still will stand for the first one. I think the first one was way underrated.
It was fine.
But, like, the second movie is bad, but, like, he goes from, like, this shy, incredibly nice, like, they say it in the movie, right? They say it in No Way Home. He goes from the shy, incredibly nice person, and the power, like, breaks his brain, and, like, it fits perfectly. I think he's fine. Lizard doesn't need to exist, except that, like, they were like, we should probably pay some more
lip service. Sandman is in the movie too, right?
Yeah,
but he's great.
Yeah, Sandman is a small, but, like, fantastically done part, and his motivations make perfect sense. Like, since you're fine with spoilers, like, he shows up in the first fight with Electro and, like, straight up protects Spidey and is like, okay, what do we need to do? Like, let's try and stop him. I can hold him off. I can only hold him off for a little while, whatever. Finds out it's not his Spidey, that sort of thing. And, like, he's on board with the plan to send everybody home. He just wants to see his kid again. And then, you know, things go wrong, not through his doing. And, like, he doesn't heel turn. It's just that he wants to go home no matter what.
Well, he's the only one who's not dead.
Yes, he is.
He's dead?
No, I don't think so.
The end of Spider-Man 3. He doesn't die
at the end of Spider-Man 3. He does not die at the end of Spider-Man 3. Peter purposely doesn't kill him at the end of Spider-Man
3. No, I thought Peter purposely didn't kill him, but I thought he functionally committed suicide.
I don't think so.
I'm not sure he can.
I think he just blows away. Like, he leaves.
Yeah, but I think he just, like, leaves. Like, because he's, like, I think he and Peter have that, like, the big emotional moment of the movie that actually lands, unlike so much of Spider-Man 3. And I think he's just, they kind of, like, come to terms. And then he sort of, like, fades away. And you could interpret it as he commits suicide. You can interpret it as he goes back to his kid. Like, it's, like, open-ended. Do you know what I mean? That's how I remember it. I mean, I legitimately have not seen Spider-Man 3 since I saw it in theaters 20 years ago.
Same.
So I did ask my parents for the Blu-ray original Spider-Man trilogy. And if I do get that, I will watch all three of them. Because I haven't seen the Raimi movies since George Bush was president. George W. Bush was president. So, like, I really have not watched those movies. So
I saw Spider-Man 2 a couple times because I am way lower on Spider-Man 2 than most people.
Oh, I'm way lower on all those movies than most people.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think they're like, fun, but I haven't rewatched them in a long time, so maybe I've got rose color.
I will never forgive the original Spider-Man movie for how it ended. Like, that final scene between Peter and MJ is just terrible. Like, I think it misunderstands it does a good job of so much with that movie, and then it just kind of punts the ending.
I just think there's so much emo-ness in that movie. Like,
there's a lot of post 9/11, but that's really Spider-Man 2.
Yes, Spider-Man 2. I'm fine with Spider-Man. I really don't like Spider-Man 2. 3 doesn't even exist in my head. Like, I've mostly wiped out 3 until this conversation we just had. Either way, I really like Sandman. I think he's great.
Cool. I'm glad that they didn't, like, make him a dick. That's
no, cool. No. He was solid, I thought, and kind of well represented, at least in what you can do in a few minutes of screen time, as far as how Marco kind of rides the line in the comics. I'd forgotten until recently that he was an Avenger at one point.
He was, yeah. There was in the 70s and 80s, he was a good guy.
Yeah.
This also nails the tone I want from a Spider-Man movie, right? Like, it doesn't cheap out on the big emotional punches, but it constant, like an MCU movie often does, or it maintains its humor in the face of that.
Right. But I mean, that makes sense in this context, as far as like Peter or Peters go. Like, things got very serious for Spider-Man 1. And it's very in keeping with their personalities that Spider-Man's 2 and 3 would try to lighten the mood and keep everybody's spirits up. Like, it fit for me.
I don't know how much I have to say, except I loved it. I plan to watch it again. I did not love the second Spider-Man. What was it? Far From Home. I really, really, really liked Homecoming.
Yeah.
But I did not especially like Far From Home. I thought it was fine. It's just a C-tier Marvel movie that I would never think of again, except that for the reveal at the end, right? And then, like, this was just like, oh, this is what I wanted. Like, and a lot of what works for Spider-Man for me is the Spider-Verse-y type stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I prefer Miles to Peter by an awful lot. And, like, this just nailed everything I want from Spider-Man. Like, 100% of everything.
We're getting two Miles movies.
It nailed most of what I want. But, you know, the biggest thing it doesn't nail for me, as far as what I want out of Spider-Man?
Kristen Dunst?
That would be maybe like number 3 on my list, 2 being Emma Stone. Number 1 is Miguel O'Hara.
Yeah. I'm not ready for that. Like, I feel like a lot of Miguel O'Hara's place in the Spider-Man mythos is just taken by Miles anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's been supplanted over the years, but like, I saw Miguel first, so to speak, you know? And
Miles is just a better version.
I've got a soft spot for the 2099s in general. So,
I mean, I really, really, really love Doom 2099. The others are just fine.
Well, look, you don't have to wait long, right? They've confirmed that Spider-Man 2099 is in Into the Spider-Verse 2, right?
Good.
So, I mean, it's the post-credit scene, right, of
speaking of post-credit scenes, that's the perfect moment to slide into the last two things I want to mention about No Way Home. And that's the two post-credit scenes. The first one I marvel at, pun intended, because of the just gigantic backhanded FU it kind of is at Sony.
It was very funny.
Because they like had this kind of jaw-dropping after-credit scene in Venom 2 bringing Eddie Brock into the MCU. And, you know, the internet goes wild and fans are like, what's going to happen? We didn't think this would really happen and blah, blah, blah. And then the first end-credit scene of No Way Home shows that, yeah, he was brought in because of this whole spell. He spent his time getting drunk in a bar in Mexico and then was sent back to his universe. Which is just like...
It's a good troll. It's the it's A plus. It
made me, so I hate Venom. Like
I also hate Venom.
Hate Venom. I
like comic Venom off and on.
I hate all.
I don't like the movie one.
Like I hate. I'm with Grazer on this. I think Venom. Venom is the beginning of the end of like Spider-Man being a good comic and a good character, in my opinion. Like we could talk a lot about that, but
sure. Either way, like the second they were like, I didn't even recognize him at first. It took me a second because I refused to watch those movies. I was like, Bane?
Bane is a Spider-Man villain.
What?
Is he in Batman versus Batman and Spider-Man team up comic? I don't think so.
So at the end of the day, like it was fine. And then he left, and then there is like I was like, all right, cool, great. Don't have to deal with that shit. And then there was the symbiote left behind. I was like, okay.
I just had a horrible realization. What's the name of the drug that Bane injects into himself?
Venom.
Yeah.
It is.
I never put that together till.
Although Venom is not in the Christopher Nolan movie.
No.
Well, no, it's not. But I'm sure at some point down the road, someone enterprising can do some kind of crossover.
I was also wildly disappointed at the second credit scene.
See, the second one I wanted to bring up because I was astounded that like it was essentially a full-blown trailer. That wasn't just an after credit scene. That was a trailer.
I don't want a full trailer. You know how I feel about trailers. Mm-hmm. I was like, I did these before the movie. I don't need these again after the movie. Like,
yeah.
I did not like its placement. I didn't like its tone. Like, I don't consider that part of the movie in any way. It's literally just a fully fucking separate
trailer. Yeah, it did feel very separate.
Well, they were pretty sure that $1 billion worth of box office could be done, and Marvel wants to remind people that... there's this other movie coming out that they're also spending a lot of money on that you should go see. So,
I mean, all the Marvel movies make a shit ton of money. Doctor Strange is not the Eternals. It will make a shit ton of money.
I mean, Shang-Chi made good pandemic money, but did not make as much. This is in shade of Shang-Chi. Everyone knows it's like, in a context of the pandemic, it was a rewarding success, but it did not like make the money Disney wanted, or, you know, would have wanted. No pandemic. Black Widow's, you know, was less than Shang-Chi, but also comparatively based on regular movies. The problem is Disney's swimming in debt and it needs all these Marvel movies to make like a fuck ton of money. And they haven't been thanks to the pandemic. So they want you to go out into the Omicron wilderness and sit in a poorly ventilated theater and watch these goddamn superheroes fight.
Look, I'm just going to say, I did not get COVID, apparently. I've been tested twice since I saw Spider-Man, but that movie is damn near worth it.
I'll wait until
it's... You don't pop more than that.
Yeah, I genuinely think it might be my favorite Marvel movie. I thought I was never bored, and there's usually at least a few times in Marvel movies I'm bored.
Yeah, they slow down a little.
And like this one was just full of really great scenes, and they all fit together. The themes were great. Like, it all just worked.
Well, speaking of something that all that works,
go on.
Witcher?
Well, we can talk. Do you want to switch to Witcher? Because I was.
Oh, you're doing Hawkeye?
Yeah, because I fucking love Hawkeye, and that last episode was amazing.
This is the penultimate episode for anyone listening after the final episode.
It was so good. Like every moment of it was fantastic. I appreciate most about Hawkeye is that it is very grounded in the character of Hawkeye's experiences in the Marvel universe in a way that I think that really the only other show that was like this was WandaVision, right? Because like Falcon Winter Soldier tried to do this, but like the problem was that Sam had only ever really been like Cap's best friend, right? Mm-hmm. Who's not Bucky, right? He didn't do a lot of things because he's the Falcon and they never focused on him as much. And so this one, they really just like invest in like all of this stuff and just like eke out like everything about like what they've done with the character and paid it off. And they just like again and again and again, while also doing this really cool broader MCU stuff. And to go after what I think that this was the most, I think all the Kate scenes in this episode were the most Kate Bishop-y of all the scenes that she's been in, and which fits her, like, again, she's coming into her own in this show. And I just so blown away. I'm like unbelievably excited. I may just wake up. I may even just stay up until 2 a.m. today to watch the Hawkeye finale. That's how excited I am for it.
So Florence Pugh is the best thing in the Marvel Universe.
Oh my goodness, yes.
The scene with the mac and cheese is the best scene. It's better than any scene in Far From Home. It's the best scene Marvel's ever put out. Like, like it should win Oscars and Emmys. Like, I know it's a TV show and they don't get Oscars.
Well, she'll win an Emmy, maybe, probably, possibly.
But like, she is the most delightful human being in the world. I'm convinced.
Yeah. No, I agree. She is the highlight of Phase 4 everything. Right now. Yeah.
She's in, I mean, like, she's like that, the scene where they just acted at each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where she and Kaylee Steinfeld just sat at a table and acted at each other, and they were both completely ridiculous and completely viable, and it was just like, it was amazing.
I at this point, I desperately want a buddy cop show of the two of them next.
I mean, I would assume she's going to be in what's got to be being set up as Young Avengers, right?
I don't know if Florence Pugh's Black Widow will be.
She's going to be in either Avengers or Young Avengers.
Oh, Florence Pugh will definitely be next Avengers movie she'll be in.
Sure.
I'm interested to see like where they go. I imagine the finale will give you a hint of like what the next step is for her. Yeah. Right? Like, she's acting as this freelance assassin.
I think she's kind of gone.
Well, she's not gone because she has a bunch of movies on her contract.
No. I mean, gone from Hawkeye.
Yeah.
She's in the finale. Like, they've said that she's in the finale. Yeah, yeah. Like, she's still.
Is it more than just a post-credit scene, though?
No. I mean, like, she said she wants to. She hasn't had any closure with actual Hawkeye, mm-hmm. right? She's going to talk to Clint. Right, like there's at least going to be a scene where she and Clint talk, right? Speaking of that, I super, super appreciated that Natasha told Clint about her. Like, that it's not just like, oh, yeah, Natasha had a sister? And he's like, oh, right, Natasha's sister. That makes sense. It's just like,
they didn't
thank you for, like, it. Yeah, like, thank you for not, like, one of the things I also really like about the show is it doesn't really create, like, fake drama between the characters, in a way that, like the great example is like Hawkeye and his wife. Like, you know, that would be, if this was, you know, the Arrow show, this would be a whole thing about how Hawkeye's trying to hide what he's doing from his wife, right?
Right. Apparently,
all that's not there.
Florence Pugh has played both Lady Macbeth and Cordelia of Lear. I do not want to imagine her as Lady Macbeth, but I would love to see her as Cordelia.
Cool.
I'm now looking through her filmography.
Yeah, such an English teacher.
I mean, I don't like Shakespeare much, but I have much fondness for Lear.
It's fair. But I can't, like, there's only one other show that could possibly compete with my love of Hawkeye, which is also conveniently releasing right now. Which is Witcher. I can't really talk about it because Aaron's only two episodes in. Al and I are about two-thirds of the way. We have two episodes left.
And Will hasn't gotten to start at all.
Have you watched the first season?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Season one. Yes.
Well, season two is better. Everything you like. It's got everything you like about the first season and cuts a bunch of stuff you didn't like. And and Henry Cavill is so good. And his relationship and chemistry with the actress who plays Siri is fantastic. There's just like, there's some changes to the story if for people who know the novels and the games that I'm sure there's many a Reddit thread unhappy about that maybe. But if you're willing to, if you're not like super invested in a more straightforward adaptation, like Wheel of Time, the characters and emotional core of the story are the same, but definitely some critical details were changed, of which we can talk about in the future.
So. Next year, however, thus next far, year. Heavy props for Witcher. So as much as I like it about equally to another show that we will finish discussing next year. I really love Wheel of Time. So much more than I thought I was going to.
I have been enjoying it, but I actually caught up with episode 7 like right before we podcasted, and it does feel like
it 7 is where we find out who the dragon is.
Yeah.
We're on the same episode.
Yes.
I mean, anyone, yeah, or someone with a Google search.
Right. And it just, well, it felt in the last two episodes that like that it's drifted further into the kind of the CW tone than I really wanted, but I mean, I'm still watching.
I can see that. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of that. I mean, the more they focus on Rand and
he's the least interesting character.
Egwene.
Yeah.
See, I like her. I really enjoy her.
I like it. The problem is, it's just they're focusing on these little relationship squabbles and this business with Perrin and
like. That's the Wheel of Time, though. The Wheel of Time is thousands of pages of that, though. Like, the Wheel of Time is the most CWE, like, high fantasy. Like,
I mean, I guess, but it also leans into the high fantasy and gives it those epic trappings. And I do kind of feel like the show has not quite captured the epic trappings feel.
I think the first couple of episodes, which leaned more into like you could feel the Peter Jackson like spewing out of those. And then when they got to the White Tower, it kind of slowed down and became a little bit more Game of Thrones-y. And then we'll see what these last two episodes do. But maybe it's like each like set of three episodes kind of is like type of fantasy. Do you know what I mean?
Know, like, if we look back on it and can kind of identify that, I might not hate that.
Where they're like, because that's like the sort of three major approaches to high fantasy, right? You can do the like Peter Jackson earnest like D&D campaign and you know kind of thing, Tolkien-esque if you want, and then you can do the Game of Thrones politics backstabbing the human condition, and then you know you can do the CW where it's like I like you, well, but do I also like you? You're attractive. Well, we're all attractive. Ah,
the Harry Potter, but yes.
Well, that's the Harry Potter. That's not really Harry Potter. Like, Harry Potter.
So the Harry Potter.
Yeah.
She likes me. You know, she likes him. There's hundreds and hundreds of pages of just relationship bullshit in those books.
I guess. I
either way, whatever it's doing or trying to do, I am constantly engaged in literally every character but Rand. I'm interested in everything that happens with everyone but Rand. And now that, like, the Rand plot has moved forward enough, maybe he'll get to be interesting too.
I think this problem with the Rand stuff was that they didn't want to show their hand to people who weren't familiar with the source material.
Like, it really worked on my wife.
And so like Rand was bland, right? And they purposely kind of like kept him to the background, except for this like him being in Egwene and them having shit, right? Like, and I think that is kind of one of those things where it's good if, it's where one of those things where they put the twist above you investing the character, right? Because like Rand doesn't have protagonist syndrome that he kind of has in the book, where you know it's like kind of obvious that he's the main character based on just like how the writer is setting it up. So like they did a good job masking that he's kind of the main character, but that also means that you're not invested in him like you should be with a main character. Hmm. But also like, a lot of these fantasy shows, the good ones and bad ones, like the main character is frequently kind of bland, and it's the supporting characters that prop up these shows. I mean, the CW, this is 100% the case frequently, but also like even older shows like Buffy, no offense to Buffy, but she wasn't always the most interesting or dynamic character on the show. And yeah. And no one's ever accused Harry of being the most interesting, go back to Glacier's example, of being the most interesting character in Harry Potter.
We all know that was Pansy Parkinson.
I mean,
so like, it bothers me that it's not just called Hermione Granger and the whatever, right? Like, she's Hermione cool. Granger figures
it out.
Hermione Granger figures it out. Harry does dumb shit. Hermione fixes it. The end.
Sometimes Ron does dumb shit.
Fine.
That's true.
But
two adolescent boys egg each other on. Then Hermione fixes it.
I agree with you that the Wheel of Time is definitely way better than I thought it would be. It is nowhere near as good as Witcher, though. I have to strongly disagree with you. Like, there's no one acting at the level in which Henry Cavill and the actress who plays Yennefer are. Like, just nowhere near.
Well, that's not true.
Moraine is the closest.
Yes, Moraine.
Yes, but
Moraine is functionally the protagonist at this point.
She's definitely the most interesting character, particularly with the stuff that was given. Was that the last episode?
Yes.
With her girlfriend? Yeah. And like that was definitely, and that's a change from the books, right, Will?
No, they say pillow friend in the books.
Do they?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't actually remember.
I looked it up. Okay,
looked
it up. Okay. I couldn't remember if they were bony in the books. I mean, those books are super horny. They're like low-key really horny.
Yeah.
they're like not as horny as like some stuff, but for
not as much as Terry Goodkind.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Terry Goodkind. The male aunt. I don't even want to go down.
Yeah, no, we don't have to go down that road. I was making a one-off joke. Keep moving.
Okay, cool. Anyway, yeah, so she is good, but I still don't think she's as good as Harry Cavill, or why is the name of the woman who plays Yennefer escaping me?
So, sure, I think she is as good as Henry Cavill, but neither here nor there. Season one of The Witcher, and like I'm comparing it more to season one because I've got a much more hole. It's entirely possible season two will blow this away. But season one of The Witcher was put together so strangely, right? Like, it's easy to forget in hindsight how, and like, it worked for me, but a lot of the plotting decisions, a lot of the pacing decisions, it had weaker episodes. It was often purposefully confusing and sometimes seemingly purposelessly confusing. I think that Wheel of Time compares perfectly well with season one of Witcher.
I disagree, but that's fine.
All right. I've got one more thing and then we can move on to the year ends. Sure. Oh, and then we got comics and then we can move on to the year ends. So I started a new podcast. It is, so we've talked about Star Wars Brawl. If you are a listener and have played, great. There's a podcast called Seventh Tier Podcast. It is about like high level competitive Star Wars Brawl play. It's two British folks whose names I actually haven't bothered learning, but their advice so far has been excellent. I've listened to 3 or 4 episodes. I really enjoy it. And if you like Star Wars Brawl, I recommend it to you.
I agree. It is an excellent little podcast. It does a good job of maintaining a mostly adult tone, which you don't always get from gaming podcasts, including this one, where they do not engage and speak like idiots who have grown up on Twitch, which many people who are in gaming spaces and are under the age of 30 frequently do. If I could go the rest of my life without hearing a 34-year-old say the word PogChamp, I could, my life would be greatly improved.
So seriously, I tried to, like, I was just killing time today while I was waiting for tutoring, like I was tutoring a kid. So I was like, I'll just scroll around Twitch and watch people play Storybook Brawl. And most of the people who, I subscribed to like 2 or 3 I liked, and most of the people who play this game are just obnoxious.
There's like a handful, and they're mostly female streamers that are not obnoxious. Like, May is really good. I will definitely suggest her.
I found a few more Star Wars Brawl podcasts because I just decided to Google it. So I'm going to sub to all of them and see if there's more I like.
But I will definitely say that the 7th tier is really good. Good strategic advice. All in all, if you like Storybook Brawl and you liked the White Book at its peak, it is excellent. it's even more on topic than even at the peakiest of peaks when we ever were.
Roy. The White Book wanes, you say? Even the end of its strength is still very strong.
So I have not listened, for example, the one that I highly recommend you listen to, though, with you talk about the design team. But, you know, we were a little loose in many episodes where you and I were not talking about the old cards, Will, I'll say, in that last year of the game.
That is true.
I'll talk real too quick about some comics I've been reading. Okay. Quotes Captain America. I read the whole second trade this week, and I'm halfway through the third. It is just so utterly fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Like,
it is a really, really, really good Captain America story. It's also a really, really, really good, like, contemporary Captain America story, right? It is also, I think I've said this in a previous episode, it's what I love is, and you know, oftentimes you get like literally probably the most prominent black intellectual among white people right now. Would you say that's a fair thing to describe him?
That sounds relatively accurate.
You know, you get him and you hand him, you know, a comic book to write. Many writers would just ditch all of the like continuity and status quo that the character would be given and write like their idealized version of the character, right? With all continuity stripped down, all that stuff. That is not what he does. He takes like, he was handed a pile of shit, which was the end of Secret Empire and the whole aftermath of Secret Empire, and spins it into gold. Where Secret Empire is basically the Trump election in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole, you know, story is basically how Cap processes something as traumatic that undermines your faith in America, the way in which the election of someone like Donald Trump would, or in this case, you yourself are transformed into a Nazi by the Cosmic Cube, you know, same kind of thing, right? And it's just so fantastic. Like it owes so much to the history of Captain America, but comes at it at a very different way. It continues the tradition of highly political Captain America stories that like really speak to their times. So like, you know, Grunewald would be extremely proud, I think, of this run. And it's an excellent use of the Red Skull.
Okay.
I mean, they made Fox News and MSNBC some of the things that he did relating to the Red Skull, you know, turning him into Jordan Peterson, for example. And it's just really good. It's, honest to goodness, the best Captain America stories that I've read since Brew Breaker. And I was kind of always more lukewarm on Brew Breaker's Cap than a lot of people were. So is this probably the best Captain America run I've read since the classic stuff?
I don't like the Brew Breaker Cap.
It's very post 9/11. Just shooting people left and right.
It's even more than that. It's just it's obsessed with his past. And like, I think that I have very little interest in Captain America's World War II exploits.
Well, like,
or Bucky's Cold War exploits.
What I think the characterization of this version of Cap, right, is like, it lets Cap be a well-meaning but clueless white person, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't do the thing. It doesn't make the Mark Millar. It's like, how do you write a contemporary Captain America? There's, like, the Mark Millar, which is, you know, does this A stand for France thing, where it turns Captain America into this, like right-wing authoritarian.
Just turns him into a U.S. agent?
Yeah, right. But that's not true to Captain America, right? Like, if you actually read the comics, we all know this. And then the other thing is, like, just turn him into, like, this idealized, like, perfect version of what it would mean to be a white person who is an American, you know, stands for America. And this tries to square the circle in which the Cap means well, but he has his limits in how he sees things. And the other characters push back on Cap's limits and he learns from them. And that's like very refreshing. And I think a really good job of like, how do you do Captain America in 2019, 2020, 2021? Soon to be, well, this run's over, but you know, in present day, it's fantastic. Tom King's Batman. I'm almost to the end. I have two more trades to read. I read the penultimate storyline, which I kind of need to slop for two reasons. One of the worst things that Geoff Johns ever unleashed on us is fucking Flashpoint Batman. I fucking hate him. Like, it's the editors should have told Tom King, do not touch that toxic piece of shit. Wait, like, it's like I hate it. I hate Flashpoint Batman. Like, so much. I want him to go away. His suit is stupid. Like, it just, like, it's just such, like, Jeff Johnsian garbage. Like, everything about Flashpoint is Jeff Johnsian garbage, but particularly Flashpoint Batman. It's, like, one of those things where that's a cool idea that, like, you're smoking some weed, you know, you're 20 with your friends, and you're like, oh, man, like, what if Thomas Wayne was Batman? And was like, whoa. It's, no. Bad. And he's, of course, one of the most important characters in that specific thing, and it's annoying. There's also a lot of wheel spinning. The other thing, and this is true because I also bought the James Tyrion trade of his run of Batman, is DC keeps throwing these shitty fill-in issue Batman things to pad out the trades. Like, there's only actually four issues in this in the second to last Tom King Batman trade.
Oh, geez.
There's only four issues of the actual story. Maybe five. And the rest is these fucking shitty Batman secret file stories, which range from stuff that was in the drawer of the editor to, like, someone at the School of Visual Arts, like, senior thesis, like, level Batman stories. Like, they're just bad or for mediocre. And I'm like, I paid, like, $15 for this, and I've got, like, four issues of what I want to read and a bunch of garbage. And that was very annoying. Like, I definitely did not feel like I got my money's worth with that trade. So I actually, it's the first Tom King Batman trade I have to slop. Because otherwise, I have been largely just really enjoying it. And I'm excited for the finale, which I'll read over the break, most likely. But yeah, that trade. Not good.
All right. On to the year ends.
Bum, bum, bum.
So let's start with the movie of the year. We have three options, one for me, one for Will, and one for Roy. Who wants to go first?
How about our glorious host, Will?
Sure. My vote
our initials are war.
I know.
What is this podcast good for?
Yeah. I've enjoyed that abbreviation for quite a while now. I used to label episodes on our end when I was editing them as, like, especially when we had opposite teams and stuff, as the war episodes. So anyway,
it's behind the scenes stuff.
I know. Peek behind the curtain, dear listeners. So I watched a lot of truly, truly forgettable stuff this year. But the real standout to me that is a film that I'm kind of itching to go back and rewatch again already, which is fairly rare for me, is Shang-Chi, which I really think, as much as I've enjoyed Loki and Hawkeye and Spider-Man and so on, I honestly think that Shang-Chi remains the best piece of Phase 4 so far. So I don't know what level of detail we're going in at, so I'm good with leaving it there if we want.
I love Shang-Chi. I think that it is my favorite, at least of recent phases, standalone Marvel movie.
I also really enjoyed Shang-Chi. It was my runner-up for my prop of the year for
me too.
So
okay, well that sounds like a good chance of being the overall winner then, if it got one number one and two runner-ups. But we'll see what the others are.
All right. So my number one, you know, I just told you last section, still Spider-Man. It didn't change in the last half hour.
So I'll pick what's going to be the most controversial. This, and the only reason this law won over Shang-Chi was because the Black Widow movie resonated more with me, simply just because I'm more invested in Black Widow. And I was very interested to sort of see the movie, see what they did with the character. And I really enjoy Black Widow way more than I think the median Marvel fan and definitely the median viewer. Like, I greatly enjoyed Shang-Chi, but because it was the first outing of Shang-Chi, and Shang-Chi's a character that, like, I never super loved in the comics, the movie didn't, like, resonate and scream with me in a way that other ones did. So just on a pure Roy enjoyment level, Black Widow's higher, even if Shang-Chi might be a better movie. I will just prop it as my favorite movie of the year.
Okay. Well, that's just because you haven't seen Spider-Man.
I have not, but I am, again, not worth sitting in a poorly ventilated theater with people who don't know how to put masks over their nose.
It's break. You had off and everyone around you didn't. You should have snuck into like a 10 a.m. showing when no one's there.
I almost did that. I almost did it. It's noon is the earliest showing. Noon being the earliest showing around here made me a little, but Omicron's really hitting my
camera. There's no reserve seats in your area?
There is, but I don't trust people. Like, how am I put this? I already have to deal with over 1,000 young people who don't understand that the mask goes over the nose and the mouth.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is just like check a theater, and like if the theater is fucking empty, then it's not a concern.
That's fair. That's fair. I'll think about it.
All right. So I had a really hard time for TV show of the year. I thought it was going to be Loki. I looked through all of our old stuff for this. I thought it was going to be Loki at first. Like, the first thing that came from was Loki. And that was immediately taken out because Only Murders in the Building was just more fun for me. Like,
I almost went with Only Murders.
Yeah. And, like, that's not even my kind of show, right? Like, I hate true crime and everything true crime related. But it was just brilliant people being brilliant in that show. And then as I was looking back, I was like, oh, Lock and Key, like we binged. Like I thought about Lock and Key for a while after it was done. Like I thought it was really interesting. But it's none of those. It's Never Have I Ever. Oh, I adore great. Never Have I Ever. It's my favorite currently running sitcom, I think, and I don't think it's close. Partially because the other two contenders ended this year. That being Superstore, which is amazing, and Kim's Convenience, which is amazing.
I almost picked Kim's Convenience for mine and decided maybe I should not pick it since it didn't start this year.
well, its ending is also the weakest part of the series. Yeah, by like a lot.
It does feel abrupt.
I mean, it just sort of has to end because one of its stars has to go be Shang-Chi, right?
Yeah.
Like, one of its stars has to go be a giant movie star, much like Andy Dwyer couldn't keep existing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but either which way. I'm going to go Never Have I Ever, because, like, I think what ultimately won it for me was the Peyton or Preston Vance, whatever his name is, the episode that centered around the jock boy and his life that I thought was going to be terrible and instead was one of my favorite episodes of the series.
Yeah.
And like the series just doesn't miss. It's fundamentally perfect. So it's my pick.
It is really, really good. As you bring up, there are a lot of, I think, superb choices for TV shows this year.
Will, go for yours.
Among all of those superb choices, I actually thought I would go out on a limb with a TV show, and man, I swear every single show that Aaron mentioned was in the running for me, and I'm like wincing and regretting not picking each one of them as Aaron listed them off. But in the end, I think I settled on Midnight Mass as folks listening to the show know, I've been in a more, let's say, gothic horror-y sort of mood for these last couple years. And
years.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. and Midnight Mass, I think, just hit a lot of really great notes for me. It's not quite strictly gothic horror. It's a bit more overt than that, you know, with the actual vampire presence and so on, and a lot of things being straight up shown rather than just inferred. But still, this isolated island setting in the Northeast and whatever, like it definitely still has a lot of those aspects. And now I'm forgetting the name of the showrunner on like the Haunting shows and Midnight Mass. Regardless, I can't think now. But he does a lot of good stuff, kind of weaving in some heartfelt depictions among the horror, which in some ways kind of makes it all the more heartbreaking, which I really, really like. So I go with Midnight Mass.
Mike Flanagan, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
So for me, there was two options, Hawkeye or Witcher. And, well, I literally just came off watching the sixth episode of Witcher, and it was so fucking good that I just have to pick Witcher. Like, it's the thing I've been looking forward to the most. Like, I was looking forward to Hawkeye, but I'm just so in love with their adaptation of The Witcher that I just can't prop it enough. But Hawkeye's kind of like prop of the year B. So we are really, I don't know why they've decided to make every winter like the winter of like fandom. I don't know what the term is, geek culture, like where they just dump a lot of things in November and December on us.
I have a theory.
Crazy.
But they, you know, it would be nice if they spread some of this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I have this feeling they're going to dump Stranger Things on us this time.
No, Stranger Things is summer.
Maybe.
It's moved it's around. Finished.
Really? I thought all three seasons were summer.
No, the first two were in the fall. Yeah. They only did the summer one because of production delays and because it was on the 4th.
Yep.
Fair enough. I was wrong.
The original one, because the one, the previous season to that was set around Halloween, right? So they released it around Halloween. So, anyway. They won't release it too close to Witcher, but they'll definitely release it, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if it's in the fall. Mm-hmm. If Witcher does a season next year, which it may not. Because this last season took 2 years to do?
Well, yes, but that was because of COVID. It was supposed to be last Christmas.
That's true.
So I haven't seen Midnight Mass, and I haven't seen enough of Witcher. So what's our pick for the final? Let's vote.
I mean, obviously I vote for Witcher. I haven't seen Midnight Mass.
So. No, you got to vote for one of the other two.
What, you didn't watch Midnight Mass, Roy?
No,
I thought you
it's
were.
It's when Alla wants to watch it, we will watch it. So.
Oh, okay. I haven't gotten in on Witcher season 2.
I've never seen Never Have I Ever either. So
wow, we're all torn with
too
like,
far apart here.
Yeah, I mean, I would throw a vote toward Never Have I Ever. It is sublime. The humor feels so natural for actual teens. It's
happy to let it win.
Fair.
It's wrong, but that's fine.
I mean, it is so good. I generally, and like I've said this before, prefer on television comedy to action, even if it's really good action.
Fair.
All right. Roy, what's your favorite thing you read?
My favorite thing I read is, I've gone back and forth this. I've actually read novels this year. This is the first year I've read multiple novels to completion. And I was just reminded that, because I was listening to the sequel earlier today as an audiobook, so technically I didn't read this, would be A Deadly Education by Naomi Novik, which I believe I mentioned on the show before. I think Will will enjoy it. It's basically kind of like, it's about kids in a wizard school, but the wizard school is trying to kill them. And it's really good.
Is it because they're trans? Because if so, that might just be Harry Potter again.
No, it's definitely not Harry Potter. There's no like Voldemort figure. It's entirely about they don't leave the school. Like, there's no like overarching fascist wizard thing that's like that. No, it's about the school and the kids overcoming the school. So. It's good. It's really good. Excellent, excellent book. But also, A Memory Called Empire was my original pick. I spread that over the summer, and I started the sequel, didn't like the sequel as much. That's a really good book that you could also, would also prop. That's a year.
Nice.
Will?
Oh, I was going to point toward Aaron. I feel like I've been in the second slot for the last couple things.
All right, Aaron, then.
Okie dokie. Then I'm going The Japanese Guide to Role-Playing Games. I prefer nonfiction to fiction at this point in my life. I am obsessed with JRPGs. The sadness of my job is I don't have the emotional energy to play them during the school year, so I just must grind like a maniac during, you know, pandemics and summer. But the guide to Japanese role-playing games is just an excellent, easy read, and I've enjoyed the crap out of it. It's my favorite book of the year.
Nice.
Bitmap Books, go get a copy. It will be out of print and cost hundreds of dollars.
I don't love the idea of that.
So I wanted to buy it right before I went to Jamaica because I thought it would be perfect for the plane. And like I knew it came with a PDF version, so I wouldn't have to carry this big book. And they weren't selling it. So I emailed them, was like, can I just buy the PDF? I'll pay full price. Just send me the fucking PDF. They were like, no, absolutely not. And then I was like, all right, cool. Maybe I'll just buy it secondhand. And it was like $200 to like $600. I was like, all right, I guess I'm waiting. So yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty hefty. I guess that does that send it on to mine?
Mm-hmm.
All right. My book choice this year is going to be The Magpie Murders. I actually meant to double check the author on that. I think it's Anthony Horowitz, but I want to make sure. Yeah, Anthony Horowitz. I know I've talked about it before. It's a murder mystery type of thing. But as a brief aside, it does a lot with framing narratives. It is a very long framing narrative, effectively. And that type of thing is something I love. To explain oh so briefly, The love of Gothic horror probably stems from my senior seminar on, you might guess, Gothic horror. And, you know, so my favorite work in there was dealing with framing narratives and Frankenstein. And so that's what hooked me, framing narratives. If you too love quirks of older, in general, styles of literary fiction, check out Magpie Murders.
Will, want to do a comic? So you're first.
Actually, I did not jot a comic down. I feel like I have not read a lot of new stuff this year, comic-wise. But one I do know that I read was the first four or five issues of the new Eternals run by
Kieran Gillen and the guy and Andrew, the guy who did the Thor run. What's his name? With Jason Aaron. Oh my God. Edric? No.
Ribic,
yeah.
Yes. And while the art can be downright horrifying sometimes, I'm looking at you, Sprite. The take is pretty cool. I've never really cared that much about the Eternals as characters. But it was interesting to dive in for a little bit and play around with characters that I'm not familiar with and see the mythos kind of twisted in a new way and see it take nods from other things I do enjoy, like say the Cylons in Battlestar Galactica and stuff. And I do like the, let's say unreliable narrator of the Earth itself. So like there's some neat little, twists. It didn't like super hook me, but it's probably the best of brand new 2021 stuff that I did read.
Rogers?
Well, mine is going to be, I finally got to read this week, and I saved it from this week's comics, which is Tom Taylor's Nightwing reboot that started in March of last year, and the hardcover collection of the first set of issues just came out. It's by Tom Taylor and various artists. It is just so utterly fantastic. It is everything that a superhero comic should be. It is also extremely refreshing. It's one, it's beautiful. The art is amazing. Two, it's super refreshing. Nightwing has had so many bad runs.
Really? I think Nightwing is one of the most consistent, really well-written characters in comics.
No.
As long as we skip the whole Rick.
The Rick thing.
That's what is the Rick thing? Oh, so I haven't read in
during Tom years. King's Batman, Bane pays someone to shoot him in the head, right? Yeah. A side effect of being shot in the head is he forgets that he's Dick Grayson and he calls himself, is it Rick Grayson?
Yeah. R-I-C. No K.
Yeah. Oh, R-I-C. Rick Grayson for like 2.5 years. where he, you know, breaks up with the Bat family, breaks up with Barbara, breaks up with, he might have been dating Corey at that time or whatever, and just goes off and is dating some librarian. It's like just utterly terrible. He stops being Nightwing. He's not a Bloodhaven. Like, it's just terrible. And that, and then the, when they made him, when he's part of the Court of Owls for like 3 years, that was also kind of not, I did not enjoy that. Like, I think Nightwing is one of the strongest characters in DC. There's also that Dan DiDio tried to kill him like 7 times in the 2010s. Like, remember when he basically almost died in Infinity Crisis and they didn't know what to do with him? Infinite Crisis, rather. So
the runs around those were really good, like the individual ones.
Yeah. You know, but like, I think in the last five, I think the Snyder era and the Tom King era were not kind to Dick. I think the success of the Titans show and his popularity on the show sort of gave DC the sort of like editorial space to sort of just do a really get a really good writer, get a fantastic artist that are top tier people and just put them on Nightwing. You know, I think the last really good Nightwing story was when he was Batman in Grant Morrison's run. There was good stuff before that, don't get me wrong, but I think that was the best thing that they did with Dick.
That's
fair. I just didn't like any of the Court of Owls stuff from Snyder. But anyway.
I mean, I hate Court of Owls.
And so, anyway, it's just really good. Like, they brought back Blockbuster, they've brought back Barbara, they've, you know, like, I don't want to spoil too much of, like, the stuff, but it's just, like, all really, really good. Wow.
I just realized and, Blockbuster. That's a
good yeah, I know.
Not so like about like those time.
Chuck Dixon deep cuts.
Yeah,
you know, man wrote a lot of really good Nightwing comics, even if he is a questionable person otherwise.
Yeah, he sucks, but his comics are really good.
Or were particularly really in the good. '90s. In the '90s, yeah. They were.
Yeah.
I honest to goodness, I was at the point where I was just going to buy the individual issues. I was so excited for the series, but they sold out, and they're like $40. For the like actual physical comics. So like you can get digital obviously, but I don't like reading comics digitally. So I was waiting for the hardcover and I bought it literally yesterday, read it as soon as I got home. I can't, this is the prop of the year. Like, unquestionably. I've read some really great comics this year.
Recency bias.
But it's also the thing I've been looking forward to since March.
I know. My comic of the year is not a comic I've read precisely. That's not true. I read some X-Men this year, and I am off the Krakoa stuff because I don't think it has the guiding, like, excuse me,
it's not going anywhere anymore.
I mean, they've basically announced that, right? Like, Hickman was like, y'all don't want to move on, bye. So, like, I basically gave up. So instead, I'm going to do an audiobook of a comic, Sandman Volume 2, with every wonderful voice actor that exists is as wonderful as the comics. Or, if not quite, then nearly. It's genuinely phenomenal. I love it. I wish more people listened. All right. And video games.
Yeah.
Who wants to go?
Has Roy started one yet?
Oh, Roy, start one. Let's do these together. This has been a...
Okay.
Oh, it's not as long as if I thought it was.
No, it hasn't been that long.
We're doing good.
I guess we're doing this together. So for video games, for me, that'd be... It's always hard for me to remember, like, what came out this year. Like, I think that the last Trails game that got translated to English came out this year, but it might have been last year. I don't know. COVID blurs everything together, particularly when it comes to entertainment. But even with that game, Mass Effect Legendary Edition is inarguably the game of the year. It's taking three of the best video games of all time, remastering them and making them accessible to a modern audience. And I got to play as Shepard again and hang out with Shepard friends and remember why Mass Effect is one of the greatest video game franchises of all time and is the best non-open world American Western RPG of all time. So it has to be Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Board card game, I have a tie. There were two Magic sets that came out this past year, Kaldheim and Strixhaven, which I think were just absolutely fantastic Magic expansions.
I didn't like Strixhaven as much as you.
Yeah, I mean, like, because I didn't like the draft. I didn't super love the draft format, but I loved so many other things about it. And I think what they did is they combined really strong flavoring with really good game design. I think they both knocked what they were trying to achieve out of the park, to do a Viking-inspired Norse set and to do a magical school set and make some really compelling, cool stuff. So I was really impressed with those two Magic expansions this year and really enjoyed both playing them and owning them and collecting them. So I didn't play any other board games, I checked. So there we go.
Mr. Lentz?
Okay, if we're doing both here, I will go with my video game choice is Life is Strange True Colors. That type of game surprises nobody, I'm sure. I really love that type of adventure game. But in particular, I had probably the single most joyous moment I've had since I was a kid playing a video game when I played True Colors. And I know I talked about this on the show before when in the, I think it's the third episode, when your characters are actually doing the LARP and it switches to a like full on, like third person Japanese RPG battle system. And my jaw just dropped. It made me so giddy that they went there and did that inside of a completely different type of game. So it gets my vote, even though it was great as a representative of that genre in all other regards. That moment single-handedly gets it game of the year for me. On the border card game front, I'm going to go with A Little Wordy, a two-player game that Kristen and I picked up. Kind of a Boggle-esque guessing game. Lots of replayability and just really tight game for you to sit down and play with one other person, particularly like a significant other. So I highly recommend it. A Little Wordy.
All right. My video game of the year did not come out this year. I don't play games the year they come out, like, as a rule. I buy, like, two new games a year. I think I bought Bravely Default 2. And
I came out this year?
I believe so.
That sounds right, yeah.
I think I bought Bravely Default 2 and SMT5, which are both games that came out this year, and I played about 2 hours of SMT5 before I went, I don't have time for this. Who am I kidding? And just stopped. Okay.
We will not see Aaron for the month of July while he binges all of his
As games. Always, I have thousands of games I will never get through.
You make a lot of progress in July. I'm always very impressed.
Yeah, July and August, I just pound out games. Like I say, I wake up, I play like an hour to a Magic. I play video games for like 4 hours. I'm very unproductive. Then I go get Noah, I play, and then he goes to bed, and we see which one I do. Yeah, it's wonderful. Which is like, I don't really want to retire from teaching. Like, I hate like everything about the profession outside of like actually teaching, but I really love actually teaching. So I don't want to retire, except that like, how else am I going to get my backlog before I die? So, whatever. My game of the year came out, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago. It was, Dragon Quest XI. I also really, really like Phantasy Star 4 and Lunar and like a few other things. But like Dragon Quest XI, I put 90 to 100 hours in and really loved. If you have any interest in classic JRPGs, there's like absolutely no reason not to play it. There's a slow part at the start. Like, it starts out really good, and then there's a slow part where you basically travel from area to area gathering team members, and like as soon as you have gathered all the team members, the game's like, all right, we're going now, and then it just goes hard until the end. So Yay, Dragon Quest XI. And my, like, card or board game is not, in fact, a card or board game. It's a digital card game. It's obviously Storybook Brawl. I've put 387 hours into this game.
Where am I?
That's absurd.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, I thought I played Hades a lot last year, and I put, like, 200 hours into Hades last year. And Hades is one of my favorite games ever.
221 hours.
Yeah. Like, I want to buy the $100 pack, except I have no reason to, right?
That's more hours than I played Crusader Kings 3. To be fair, I've left Storybook Brawl on a few times.
Yeah, me too. But maybe 10.
I mean, you've 53 hours played recently, according to Steam. Yeah. So,
I mean, weekends have become, like, take Noah to Dad's house, sit down, play Storybook.
I mean, you and I have both been engaged in this Don Quixote like quest to make Mythic. This, like, I kept saying to myself, today's the day that I make
I get to 9:57, then immediately lose four games in a row. There's no reason for it. It's clearly in my head, right? There's no other reason for it.
It's definitely not that case for me, but
I keep getting, I've gotten to 30, so 4,000 is Mythic, and I keep getting to like 39.57, 39.72, and then lose it, was, like, 3 games in a
row. 39.70 something, and I lost 4 games.
Yeah, it's just started amazing. Like, it's got to be mental. Like, I don't, like, is my record when I'm not, like, that close is so much better? Whatever it is. I think the game is truly brilliant. I might burn out soon because I'm sick of the game being, like, and it's going to be this way for a while, but the game right now is build early game strength, then play Good Boy. And like, or trees, but Good Boy or Trees is the third best by a fair margin. Good Boy or Did You See Hat Ball, so you can do spells, or do you just get randomly knocked out by one of those decks, right?
Yeah, I know.
Like, and it's just like, I would like them. Like, it felt like there was a more of a diversity of strategy last patch. And I don't know if there was, but
I think there was. I mean, now returning this back, which we sometimes do in Storybook Brawl, I think actually dwarves not preying on
the good boys
people stuff, trying to transition into good boy stuff, is like, the with dwarves not being the like check that keeps kind of that like switch in, like those kind of like very like you go into it and punishing that, I think, and is one of the things that's,
and screwing up Apocalypse made Good Boy better too, right? Like, they made Apocalypse kind of shitty now, so like if you were a good boy, you'd have to be careful that like Apocalypse didn't randomly
breach you there
and like be, yeah, and eat your shit just because, right? Like,
yeah,
like there were these checks, and like I feel like the checks have sort of fallen away, and like re-adding Trophy Hunters is like, well, I can Trophy Hunter Good Boy too. And it's like, great. More ways to do just like,
yeah, you know,
there's two or three Good Boy decks and you can do them 8 different ways.
I did think that they thought that Slay, it might be when there's less people trying to get into Slay that Slay gets better. But I think there's too many people trying to, include myself. Trying to get into Slay, and so like these Slay decks don't work out.
I mean,
and so you're not preying on people. Like, I think they thought that Slay would be that predator for those, because you can get it so early and start scaling so strongly in the mid game that you just sort of punish people who are trying to like hold their board together to make that good boy switch, which happens to us frequently, right? Like, when we're like, oh, we'll take this early copycat, and we don't have anything to do with the copycat, but it's sitting there, and we just get punished because we spent 4 gold and didn't improve our board.
I mean, I consider copycat at this point in my head, and I don't think I've actually said this while we're playing, the equivalent to buying experience.
Yeah, it can definitely be like that, yeah.
It's just like, I bought experience this turn, and like I can sell it back later if I need to.
Well, we're putting Will to sleep. But yeah, as you can clearly
see, Story Referral is great. I definitely played for like 6 hours today.
Same.
And had my first, like, I was just like, I'm doing Good Boy or I'm doing Mages, and like, you're going to have to force me into something else, and had my best day in ages.
There you go.
So, yeah. Go Starbuck Brawl. You rock. Hooray. I now have 2 Starbuck Brawl podcasts to listen to, too, so I don't have to harass Will forever.
Message me the names.
Well, you know, seventh tier, the other is Book of Heroes.
Book of Heroes? Cool. Go ahead, Will.
I'm not sure what I'm going ahead with.
Your video game, right?
Life is Strange.
Oh, he did say it. I don't know why I missed it.
We're done. We've got Slaps of the Year.
All right.
Because why end positively?
Yeah. We're the White Book Podcast.
The year rarely does.
But neither does. Neither New did. Eve is a game the worst Thrones the Living game. Card Game.
Oh. Harsh.
I'm not going to be a dick. I wanted to be a dick, and I stopped myself. It was going to be mean.
Thank you.
I'll tell you after the podcast. I'm going to slap America, and I don't think that's being a dick. We have, again, let COVID run us over because we're like, should we behave like there's a pandemic? Fuck it. Oh, shit, new variant. Should we share the vaccine with the world so that variants not developing? Fuck it, profit. So, like, slops to America. Stop being bad at literally everything that makes someone good at, like, being a person.
There we go.
Will, you've got some. I have some, too. Just,
yeah.
I'm trying to find exactly
what I want to say. I'll rotate around a little bit. I'll just give one thing at the moment, and that is going to be, amazingly enough, Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1. Brand new game from Frogwares. We don't need to delve too far into that, but I love the this type of game. It fits right in very similarly to the Life is Strange and so on. And I do like this game. But there's one aspect of it that I have to slop so hard. The weekend I bought this, I excitedly sat down to play, and I shit you not that I spent at least 2 hours, probably three, restarting and replaying a quest. I would play through something, and it would feel like I was locked up, and like a quest trigger was not flipping or something, so I'd roll back to the last save and try to play through it forward again, and I tried to do stuff in different order, eventually rolled back to a much further save and completely started the entire quest line over again and all this stuff before realizing what the real problem was, which, dear listeners and co-hosts, I wish I could show you while we're listening to a podcast a screenshot of the dialogue system in this game. If you have played something like Mass Effect, for instance, it looks almost exactly the same with the dialogue wheel in the middle. Except, for instance, what tripped me up is I had two choices on the wheel. One was to leave the conversation, and one was to present evidence to the person I was talking to. And inside the wheel, there's a little book icon next to the present evidence. And being someone trained on BioWare games, I thought that icon was the cursor pointing at the selected dialogue option.
Oh.
So I would go in, hit the button, and Sherlock would just immediately turn around and say, "I have somewhere else to be." And I thought that it wasn't letting me select the option to show the evidence and proceed. Oh man, I was hot when I realized it. And I felt dumb that I didn't understand.
Hey, that's bad UI design.
Yeah, it is. Just... And I showed it to, I don't know, probably a dozen other gamer friends. I took a screenshot like that day and sent it to people. And I was like, just look at this. Tell me which dialogue option do you think is currently selected? And all of them told me that they thought present evidence was selected. So we've all been conditioned by Mass Effect. And other developers just need to know that and work with it.
Elementary, my dear William.
I want to slop 2021. in general. And, you know, this is one of those weird things where actually my life has gotten better over the course of the last couple of years. Many things have improved for me professionally and financially. But the world is really getting shitty. And
Getting shittily more shitty.
Yes.
There you go.
What COVID continues to expose over and over again is the glaring fundamental structural gaps of our society. And in the United States, but based on some other countries' current history with COVID and their political problems, it's not just a United States problem, but I can only really speak to America. We refuse to address these structural problems, even though they're staring us in the face. And it's a willfulness. And at this point, I'm just done with that willfulness. It's very frustrating and kind of hopeless. And 2021, which began on a really oddly fucked up note. Let's not forget how this year began, which was with an insurrection by a bunch of crazy reactionaries.
Now that's
almost overturned an election. That's like the slop of the year. But things didn't get better from there. And that's the tragedy of 2021. So I have to slop 2021.
All right. I'm going to slop something less serious before we go. Because we had, like, let's pop culture slop and then we can call it a night. Because I think Will has two more pop culture slops, right?
One that I remember offhand, but yeah.
Okay. Well, one is a 90s video game that they made a very bad movie. Okay.
What?
I don't actually remember which one that is.
Mortal Kombat.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mortal Kombat.
That movie was so fucking bad.
It was. Let's just prop that right now. Mortal Kombat was horrible. How do you make a film about Mortal Kombat and not include a tournament? I don't know.
Yeah, worst movie I saw this year, almost without question. So I would like, Hasaguchi, whatever. I would like to slop Square or Squaresoft.
Square Enix. I believe its current name is.
Sure. The Pixel remasters seem great, and they're releasing them on mobile phones, and then they're going to wait like a year, and we all know they're going to release them on consoles, but then they can't sucker everyone into buying them on mobile and then again on consoles. And it's really money grubbing and shitty. And it just didn't.
Wait, those aren't available on consoles? So, like,
no, they're
the
only
Metro Encounter. You can get on the PC.
I don't believe they're Steam either, but let me double check since I have Steam open because I wanted to know how many hours I played the previous game. I'm going to hit Final Fantasy IV.
There's a Windows edition of Final Fantasy 15.
Final Fantasy 4 does not say Pixel Remaster next to it.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 5 the Pixel Remaster, yeah. The fifth one.
So it is available Steam, just not consoles. Got it.
That's so much better. Like, I cannot play these games on... Not all of them are out yet?
No, it's like 1 through 5 out. 6 has just been delayed till February. 6 is obviously the one I'm waiting for. I think it is one. It is probably still my favorite Final Fantasy. It's a constant war between that, Tactics, and 9. But either way, I would like to play them on the Switch.
It seems like a no-brainer. Soon you can play them, though, on your handheld Steam things.
Yeah, when the Steam Deck comes out, maybe I'll just get them on the Steam Deck because, like, odds are they're going to be cheaper on Steam than they will be.
I mean, they're only $17.99. That's pretty good value.
Is it for a 40-ish year old game, 35 year old game?
Yeah, but it's how many hours of entertainment?
40-ish.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's solid. Like, I think it's value to money. Like, and it's remastered, like legitimately remastered.
I would like to play. I don't have any interest in playing 1 through 3. I don't think
does anyone besides like the truly degenerate people.
I don't know.
Like, really.
Three is legitimately fun.
3 is fine.
Oh yeah, they added all the cool art into it. Yeah, it's worth the $17.99.
Like, yeah, so I will get these when the Steam Deck comes out, maybe then. But they should just be released on consoles. Stop trying to double dip Square.
I mean, Square's gonna eke every fucking dollar out of you. Like the only people who are bigger than that is Wizards of the Coast, right? Like we just slop the sheer amount of like financial extraction that these fandom companies like have engaged in over the last, you know, I mean forever, but it's gotten like really over the top. You know, soon there's gonna be Sony Plus before we know it, right? Like it's just every fucking streaming service. You know, every you want New Line Cinema Plus? Well, that's the only way you're going to be able to watch the Lord of the Rings movies soon. Like, you know, it's just fuck that shit. Fuck it.
You know, speaking of that money grubbing, can I also slop Asmodee buying out Miniature Market, probably the U.S. largest U.S. retailer of tabletop games?
Yeah, you should, because that's fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm on a terrible.
They also bought Dark Horse.
Like Asmodee bought Dark Horse?
No. The company that bought Asmodee bought Dark Horse.
Really? Wow, that's bad.
Oh, Embracer Group?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, holy moly. I'm actually, yeah, that's news from today. Embracer Group acquiring Dark Horse.
Wow.
Days after announcement of Asmodee acquisition.
That's huge. Dark Horse. Wow. Dark Horse no longer an indie comic company. Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Man.
I wonder if that means
it is trippy watching the megacorps like come to life in my lifetime.
Well, we should definitely slop our cyberpunk dystopia.
Agreed.
That we are in. We are just living in. You had another one?
Flying car, man. Oh, well, actually, you know, the other one kind of falls in line with this. The other one I was going to mention is He's All That remake on Netflix, which I watched. And you know what? I even laughed at some stuff. Ooh. But it just like solidifies for me the like sheer vapid depths of the remake culture of so much of modern Hollywood, and the way that even that can hit rock bottom, and so much of that film really just becomes a product placement commercial. Like I previously slopped on the show right after I watched it, when you have teens awkwardly entering a party and then saying, "Hey, look at that Pizza Hut. I've got to go get me some of that. And then maybe some Taco Bell." And like, just,
that's how I speak.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm hamming it up, but it felt like that. And it just, that is the hellscape that we live in.
You know, well, this reminded me of something. Fuck PBS's Masterworks, like, British importation scheme. Like, there's so many good British television shows that I enjoy that like have a bunch of new seasons come out this year, but they're not coming out until 2022 because I don't know reasons. It's not like it's from Japan or China or France. They don't have to dub it. It's the same fucking language,
right?
Like, this is I know Doctor Who fans suffered for this for a long time, and now they do day and date of worldwide for Doctor Who. Why can't they do that? They don't have to translate it. It's just the same fucking thing. Why do I have to wait until sometime in the middle of 2022 for the next season of Endeavor? I don't know. I love PBS Masterpiece. It's amazing. Thank you for providing that service. But also, fuck you for taking so long to bring these British shows over. Boom.
Slaps to the current Doctor Who showrunner while we're here.
The current one? The one that they're bringing back?
No,
Russell Davies, or the one who did the female Doctor
Who? The one who did the female Doctor who clearly had no idea what the hell they were doing.
And besides, like, the good decision of having a woman play Doctor.
Yes, I don't
believe that was that person's decision. I'm so far behind on who at this
point. So,
I don't know.
I watched that first season, and then, like, I didn't watch the second season, the one that was this year, and enough people have been like, no, it doesn't get better, please don't do that, that I'm just like, huh.
Okay. Well, they brought What's-His-Face back, right? For the next series, Russell T. Davies, the guy who rebooted it, right?
Right.
He's back.
I'm sure it'll go back to being good. I don't blame
anyone involved at an acting level. All the acting was very good. I blame the showrunner for not having any idea what he was doing.
Fair.
But at the end of the day and at the end of the year.
Hold on, Aaron. Before you do that.
What, slopping more shit?
No, not slopping.
I thought we were done.
I have one final prop of 2021. And that is, I want to prop White Book NFTs. You too, right now, can go to thewhitebookpodcast.com/NFTs and earn yourself. You can have a non-fungible token of it, one or more of these amazing banger of episodes. And especially valuable are those episodes where we weren't phoning it in, those high-quality seasons. Featuring Kyle, featuring Daryl.
Wait. There was no point where Kyle wasn't phoning it in. He was literally doing this or pooping.
Okay. Fair. Oh, all right. You can own a non-fungible token of Kyle saying, "Konnichiwa, bitches." You can own that. Why would you not? Why would you not? People are buying poorly drawn apes.
We should make the non-fungible Konnichiwa bitches supercut.
Oh man!
Oh,
every time he says it,
these are like, if you purchase
Price.
Again one of these extremely rare, one of a kind non-fungible tokens, not only will you be supporting your local podcast host, you'll be making a sound investment for yourself, your family, and future generations. So, as we end here in 2021, I want to thank everyone who has purchased a White Book NFT and made the right and appropriate investment in their future. I want to prop it.
Oh, sorry. Let's prop our three listeners too. Hi, David. Hi, Sam. Hi, Dan. Thanks for being the last three.
What a way to close out the year and the season and the episode. See you next time, Space Cowboys.
Slops to Dan, Sam, and David, because we could quit if not for them.
That truly put us in the danger zone.
That definitely did. Oh, man.
Sorry, Will. You're going to have to put up with me doing the NFT thing at like the end of every episode.
You should just make the NFTs over Christmas break. I want to see if anyone's dumb enough to buy them. And if you randomly make a bajillion dollars, share with us.